This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite is sponsored by Mellanox Technologies, the leading supplier of end-to-end connectivity solutions for HPC and cloud server and storage clustering. www.mellanox.com.
This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry, with Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
GPU computing hits the mainstream, and Microsoft launches new HPC version.
Hello, everyone, and good morning for HPC Wire Soundbite for September 24th, 2010. Available every Friday on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and I'm joined once again by Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. Hey, good morning, Addison.
Good morning, Michael.
Well, we sort of were split up this week here on the East Coast. I was on the West Coast. I was at the NVIDIA GPU Tech Conference, and you were out there on the HPC and Financial Markets Conference, and then you went on to Washington. So we're sort of split up, and we're going to talk about the Financial Markets Conference, I think, on next week's show. There's a lot to talk about there, but there's a lot to cover here with the GPU Tech Conference.
That's right, and we should mention to our listeners that if you're noticing a difference in sound quality today, it's because we're covering everything remotely with all the conferences this week. So we don't have our regular recording infrastructure, and hopefully everyone can follow along with us.
Yeah, it's a little rough this week, but we're going to manage.
And, I was in New York for the HPC and Financial Markets Conference and then on in D.C. for a few other things. But other members of our team, Chris Willard, Sue Korn, Laura Siegerval, were able to attend parts of the GPU Technology Conference as well. So we got it all covered.
And we are going to cover the financial area next week, but we should at least mention one of the announcements that was at the New York event, and that was the Windows HPC Server 2008 R2 launch, their third iteration of their HPC server platform. We found out a little bit about that while you were there. What was your general impression of that product and that launch?
First of all, it's notable that they did it in conjunction with HPC and Financial Markets, and Bill Hilf from Microsoft gave a keynote address. But overall, I think the most important thing with this announcement is that it starts to synthesize or coalesce the Windows HPC roadmap around this long-term vision of Microsoft pursuant to their technical computing initiative. There's a lot more than just the operating system at play here. There's looking forward to the integration with cloud computing tools like Azure. There's desktop development with Visual Studio. And then there's the integration of things like high-end Excel applications into this HPC vision. And this Windows HPC Server 2008 R2, if I got the string of letters and numbers correct, is the first product step forward in that organizational vision.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the takeaway here, is that they've got this sort of their vision is this sort of vertical integration of this HPC stack from desktop to cloud with cluster in the middle and bringing in all the Windows pieces for leverage like that. And it is a unique vision, or it's going to be a unique software stack. Nobody else can really do this. So it does have somewhat of a competitive advantage. And I guess in the financial area, especially when you start integrating things like Excel into it, allow the quants to burst, you know, these complex financial models to
right.
The clusters and then to clouds, that has to be very attractive.
Well, the particular strength that Microsoft is seeking to leverage is Windows dominance on the client side, the client device, the workstation, the laptop, the PC, right. and people's popularity, the popularity of tools like Visual Studio for application development. If you can picture a world in which you're running, a CAD or entry-level CAE environment on a PC or workstation, and you have the ability to seamlessly run that out into a Windows data center that's running HPC, or hit your Azure button to go find resources in the cloud to do that. You can do that with your Excel applications, your Excel models, or you can do it in Visual Studio with an application you're developing to seamlessly and dynamically run that out into the cloud. Now, there, you know, not all that capability exists yet, but the important point is that this is Microsoft's vision for the future of HPC, and I think it's a compelling vision and one that they might be able to continue to make inroads with.
Yeah, it is a compelling vision, and I think the key word is seamlessly, because that seems like that's always been the hard thing to do in HPC, to make things seamlessly transparent from one platform to the other. So if they can pull that off, that will be sort of a redefinition of what can be accomplished here.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, then I went on from New York to some meetings in D.C. Most notably, I attended an NSF task force meeting on cyber learning and cyber infrastructure and how to get computers more embedded into education for a lot of topics, including HPC, and fixing that mismatch between what skills are needed in the HPC workforce versus creating those kind of programmers at the graduate and undergraduate level in engineering programs at schools. So I was doing that while the rest of my team was coming back to the GPU technology conference, which you were also at.
Right, I was here all week and wasn't quite sure what to expect. It was a much bigger conference this year. I was here last year where they announced Fermi, and you know, there was an exhibitor component to it, but it was much smaller. I mean, the exhibitor, the area was twice as big. I think there were like 100 exhibitors here this year, most of which were vendors. And it was an extra day. There were more sessions, a lot more sessions. I ended up, you know, just getting sort of a bite of what they were presenting here, but the application area was all over. So there was, you know, everything from seismic modeling, weather simulation, computer vision, medical imaging. And then there were new things like business intelligence and speech recognition applications and military applications now. It really kind of showed you how far GPUs are sort of penetrating where CPUs, you know, sort of had exclusive platform just a few years ago. So you can sort of see how fast this is spreading.
Well, and yeah, the breadth of application areas that were discussed at GTC conference this year, I think is one of the more compelling stories. And related to that, there were a lot of new both hardware and software OEMs that got signed up. I think we'll get the chance to talk through some of those new announcements after we take a break for our sponsor.
This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite has been sponsored by Mellanox Technologies, the leading supplier of end-to-end connectivity solutions for HPC and cloud server and storage clustering. www.mellanox.com.
So, Michael, coming back to this concept of these new application areas, I agree that it's interesting to see so much interest across so many application areas. I think one of the comments that was made in the keynote for the conference was the more than doubling of CUDA downloads from 2009 to 2010. So we know there's a lot of experimentation, and it's both in these traditional HPC areas as well as what we term to be the edge HPC areas outside of science and engineering, things like complex event processing, some of the sensor-based data, some of the business areas that are adopting GPU as well.
Exactly, and some of these are in production now. It's a little difficult to tell how far in production they are. People don't, commercial institutions don't fully divulge all that, but we know it's being used for seismic exploration. There's some biomedical imaging deployment, certainly weather modeling at the research labs. That's being deployed in other areas. I think there's probably some of the military and the financial space that are deployed and
right.
Sort of hidden from direct view for obvious reasons.
You know, not to be argumentative, Michael, but that actually is when you're talking about in production. This is kind of the one area that I'm most skeptical about. We do see a lot of people testing GPUs at some scale thus far, but from what we've seen so far, real wide-scale deployment of GPU in production has been isolated, I guess is the word for it. There's a lot of interest and a lot of testing, but not a lot of wide-scale build-out for production codes.
I think that's a fair comment. I think that's probably true. But I know there's some in production. I think there's some in production in all the verticals we cover, the ones we sort of just mentioned. But it's not widespread yet.
Right. Now, some of the first areas that'll go, of course, are oil and gas, where you have a really fast pace of algorithmic development. And they do a lot of internal research. And then the other researchy areas in government research labs and, of course, academia. Were there any verticals you saw that you thought were missing, or rather, I should say, didn't see because they were missing?
Well, the one that seemed to be missing was financial services, and I think there was at least one or two sessions here on it, but compared to the others, it was sort of missing in action. I'm not quite sure why, but I imagine sometimes hard to get those end users talking about their particular implementations using GPUs. They want to keep their competitive edge, and they're the shyest of verticals that we cover for various reasons. So
yeah. Well, and also in finance, you've still got an enduring role for FPGAs. I'm not sure that everything's going to flip over to GPUs in finance.
I would say everything will flip over to GPUs if they're looking for the type of floating point acceleration that they're going to be needing for some of these complex models. I mean, it might not be happening just now, but looking at the ecosystem here, I mean, it's, and looking at the ecosystem for FPGAs, even at the software level, this is much more expensive and broader and deeper.
Not to be argumentative again, but you said floating point acceleration. I think there are a lot of financial applications that aren't floating point, is the point. There's, you know, if there is a decimal point, it's still an integer number of cents, right? So these aren't floating point codes, and some of those more scalable integer finance applications, I think, are doing quite well with FPGA.
Yeah, and we see that in biotech as well. I mean, there's bioinformatics has a lot of scalar codes too, but there were a lot of bio applications here. I mean, that was almost the second most, maybe the first most widely sort of covered application area here, and different types of things. But yeah, I think we should probably talk a little bit about also some of the hardware OEMs that were, and then the ISVs as well.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that. I mean, because the one thing we're agreed on is that there's a lot of interest. And when there's a lot of interest, the OEM community is going to start to respond. So start with some of the new hardware platforms or partnerships that got announced.
So what we saw this week were three new announcements for Blade-based products. And it came from Cray, IBM, and T Platforms, the Russian company from Moscow. So Cray, they didn't launch anything, but they basically announced their intention to add a GPU acceleration component to their XE6, their Baker System supercomputers, and that'll happen later down the road. They're not even giving a time frame for that, but I'm thinking later this year. And then T Platforms also added a GPU blade option with the new Fermi GPU. And the interesting thing about that is, well, it's an interesting design, but they're looking like they want to sell that possibly into the U.S. if they can find a partner to do that with. They think they've got a unique enough solution there. Their main competition here right now is for something like is Cray, because these are geared towards petascale applications. These things are scalable blade solutions for very large clusters up to petascale, and they think it's unique enough that they can compete in the U.S. They've got to find a system integrator or otherwise partner that'll sell with them. So that'll be interesting to see what happens there.
Yeah, that is a really exciting announcement from T Platforms. I don't know if it speaks more to the global nature of NVIDIA GTC or more to the global nature of T Platforms, but somehow they've managed to meet on this and had T Platforms making the announcement in San Jose.
Yeah, and they were here, and you know, they divulged a lot more than Cray did about their design. I mean, they basically brought board with them. The interesting thing about the Cray and T Platforms announcement, they're using this new X2070 module from NVIDIA that NVIDIA was sort of playing down. They were very quiet about it. They had no announcement on it. It was just basically announced through these two M's, but it's sort of a miniaturized version of their original modular GPU that fits into a blade form factor. Same flops, same power, but a different form factor, so to speak, with the blades. Now, IBM also announced their blade, which is big news for NVIDIA, because this is now their blade center solution with GPU acceleration. Now, they're using the older modular GPUs, but you know, we know IBM's reach into this space, so NVIDIA was very happy to get IBM on board. Of course, they announced, IBM announced iDataPlex a couple weeks ago with GPUs. Now they've got the Blade Center with GPUs as well. So yeah, obviously everybody's seen this demand, so I think IBM certainly wouldn't be there if they didn't think they could sell more broadly into this market with GPU acceleration. So I think it's just another sort of data point on the road that this is going mainstream.
Yeah, I mean, it is a data point. You don't know exactly how far it's going to get taken, but it is on an upswing. And looking at how many OEM platforms there are is always a good metric to help assess what the demand is, what the demand trajectory is. Going back to, say, for example, the battle between Opteron and other x86 and Itanium platforms in 2006. Prior to that, we saw a lot of OEMs adding on AMD processor options to their servers. And then, you know, our data shows the brief time when AMD was out shipping Intel processors for a little while. Now, they subsequently fell off of that, but we did see, you know, the OEM adoption going along with the actual end user adoption.
Yeah, and they've got the hardware. And the other side of this is we're seeing the ISVs start to pick up on this in a much more aggressive way.
Which is extremely important because, first of all, if the application isn't running, then you know, what's the point? Second of all, this has always been assumed that it would be a potential blocker because the ISVs have to figure out the licensing model for it, right? And one of our concerns was that you're going to the ISV saying, hey, I've got a good idea. You can certify your code to accelerators, which means you'll do a lot more work in order to sell fewer licenses, right?
right. So their motivation is a little complex there, but I think they see the writing on the wall and the demand from the customers. So we saw an announcement from Ansys with their Ansys Mechanical product. They're going to accelerate that with GPUs or support the GPU acceleration there. And that's going to come out later this year.
I'm not surprised to see Ansys on the list. I'd say out of all of the ISVs, they've done as much as anybody to be at the forefront of adopting new models of doing things, new technologies. So having Ansys in there, I think is a key first step, but not surprising to us.
Yeah, and it was basically the only application ISV that announced, although there were two sessions that I ended up going to, one from LSTC, makes LSDyna, and then one from Simulia, who makes Abacus, and it looks like they're on the same path. They didn't make formal announcements, but certainly the implication is they're going to have something coming out probably in the same time frame as Ansys to GPU accelerate LSDyna and Abacus, respectively. So it looks like people writing these codes are going to have some alpha codes they're going to be able to use, you know, these FEA models and these engineering product simulation models to do this a little more transparently now. And then sort of on the language side of it, we saw PGI come out with an announcement of their intention to build a CUDA to x86 compiler. Now CUDA, of course, is the environment that we associate with GPU computing, with the port to make the right C code for the GPU, but it's also a general purpose parallel language. And as such, there's some temptation to make it more portable across different architectures. And the natural one would be multi-core x86. And the idea, of course, being that you write a CUDA program once and then you run it on whatever platform you happen to have. Now, that's the whole idea behind OpenCL, which is the open standard version. But there's nothing really closed about CUDA. The APIs are published. There's documentation for it, and you just have to go at it. I mean, AMD could do this for their GPUs and CPUs they wanted. They could write CUDA ports, they just haven't done so. But PGI, it looks like they're on the road to doing that, and they're going to, I guess, demo CUDA x86 compiler at AFC come in a couple of months.
Well, clearly there's a lot of momentum around this conference, and I know you're still excited about it, Michael. We know a lot of people are interested in it. We stop short of your view that it's already gone completely mainstream, although we know there's a lot of interest in it. So we appreciate you keeping us apprised from there.
Yeah, and obviously we'll be seeing all these applications, these same players, in a couple months at SC, and we'll see how it pairs when they have like CPUs in the game too, but that's sort of the way the conference impressed me anyway. It was like a CPU-less supercomputing show in a sense, and almost the same size and confusion of it as well. So obviously we'll be following that, and next week we'll delve a little more into the financial markets news that's been coming out.
Get the financial markets conference from this week, as well as there's another one next week that's put on by the A-Team group, the High Performance Technologies for Trading and Risk Conference and Exposition. And Sue Korn, who we announced as a new senior analyst on our team, will be covering that for us. And we'll have her as a guest on the podcast next Friday to talk about both of them.
Excellent. I look forward to that. Well, until next week, then, we'll be back here next Friday.
Great. Thanks a lot, Michael. We'll talk to you next week.
Mellanox's end-to-end 40 gigabits per second InfiniBand connectivity products, consisting of ConnectX 2IO adapter products, cables, and comprehensive IS5000 family of fixed and modular switches, deliver industry-leading performance, efficiency, and economics for the best return on investment for performance interconnects. Mellanox provides its worldwide customers with the broadest, most advanced, and highest-performing end-to-end networking solutions for the world's most compute-demanding applications. For more information on Mellanox's end-to-end connectivity solutions for HPC and cloud server and storage clustering, visit www.mellanox.com.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.